injury carefully, then studied the stitches on his shoulder blade. With a tiny pair of scissors, he snipped them and removed them. Ryan looked around the room and saw very little except for an enclosed shower-like stall that was shaped like a bullet. The top was a translucent semi-pointed dome.
There we go. You are ready for the Medi-Stereo unit, Mr. Carter. Would you like me to investigate the availability of a new eye for you?
A new eye? You can give me a new eye?
Oh, aye, of course. Now, I'll have to see if there's one that we can match with the color of your left eye, but it shouldn't be too difficult.
Never mind. The commander wants to see him PDQ.
The doctor sneered at Doug, curling his lip in disdain, and then directed Ryan to enter the bullet-shaped stall. The walls were tiled, and sprays of warm disinfectant began jetting from tiny nozzles on all sides. It was the first time in hours Ryan hadn't been cold, so he luxuriated in the welcomed heat. The fine streams of fluid scoured his body from the chin down, the churning spray of atomized liquid penetrating every pore, every cut, every wound. Ryan felt his fatigue ebbing, as well as the pain. He assumed there was some sort of analgesic mixed in with the spray, and perhaps even a mood elevator. It was hard to believe he'd ever been hurt, considering the euphoric feeling rising within him. After he was dried, stepping back out into the cold room was a distinct shock. Ryan allowed the white-coated man to use an aerosol can spray on his bullet and knife wounds.
This liquid bandage contains nutrients and antibiotics and will nip any infection, Mr. Carter. Its composition is very similar to real flesh, and your body will absorb it as your injuries heal.
Is that what you guys are made of? Skin from a can?
Of course not. Our technique is far more sophisticated, far more...
That's enough, Crossley. Get dressed, Cordor.
Ryan did as he was told, noting that his knife and sheath had been removed from the belt. At least the transceiver was still tucked safely in his coat's inner pocket, and his weighted scarf hadn't been tampered with.
Now what?
Doug opened his mouth to reply, then cocked his head slightly, as though he were listening to whispered instructions. He pressed a spot at the base of his throat, just beneath his larynx.
Acknowledged.
Ryan eyed him suspiciously, wondering if he was responding to ghostly voices only he could hear.
You didn't answer my question, Doug.
Doug grinned and squeezed the stock of the shotgun affectionately.
Now, despite your combat acumen, we'll find out if you can take it as well as you dish it out.
Once the miniature city had quieted down, Mildred started heading back toward the Lincoln Memorial, planning to return to the ventilation shaft and make her way to another level, hopefully to the primary circulation station. The psychologist in Mildred despaired of ever reasoning with the anthill inhabitants. The very existence of the cunningly crafted miniature model of Washington, D.C. indicated a severe disassociative disorder. It was obsessive-compulsive behavior taken to a frightening degree. The people inside Mount Rushmore had lived too long in isolation to feel emotions beyond contempt for the outside world or anger if their wants weren't immediately gratified. In that, they were very similar to the people of Hellskell. Someone kicked Mildred from behind, sending her sprawling face down across Constitution Avenue. Mildred tried to push herself over, only to feel her upper arms viced by a pair of hands that felt like hydraulic-powered steel clamps. She allowed herself to be pulled to her feet, managing to keep her revolver in her hand. The force of the blow had knocked her headset loose, and it dangled between her legs.
Ooh. You're a black woman, aren't you? I heard they still existed, but I never thought I'd meet one.
You just met your last one.
Mildred checked her headset, but it was cracked. The earpiece was loose from its plastic casing, exposing the wires beneath. One of the wires had been snapped, and she didn't have the time to splice the ends back together. She bit her lip against the fierce pain lancing through her lower back where the man had kicked her, probably with a bionic leg. She couldn't crouch, so she began a shambling walk. Gritting her teeth, clinging to buildings for support, Mildred changed direction. There was no way she could scale the Lincoln Memorial and climb back into the ventilator system. She could barely walk, and she couldn't help but fear a ruptured disc in her spine. There had to be another way out of the miniature city. Mildred paused to rest in Garfield Park. While she tried to distance her mind from the agony in her body, she gazed unfocusedly at the ground beneath her. She suddenly realized she was standing on real dirt, densely packed, but genuine soil just the same. An idea popped into her head. Unsteadily, she bent, dug up a handful of the dirt, rolled it, and worked it between her fingers, crushing the larger clods to fine powder. She pitched it into the empty air, watching it whirl, the heavier granules separating from the dust. As the smaller particles settled, they drew into a neat, vertical strip of light gray powder, about 3 feet wide. The band of dust slid across the ground, moving over and around obstacles, still keeping its vertical shape. Mildred followed the strip of powder through the city. Inside of a minute, she had reached the outskirts of the city. Where the Navy Yard and the Anacostia River should have been were vanadium alloy floor plates joining with a wall. Mildred had guessed that an electrostatic field was a standard feature in every room and on each level of the installation. She had followed the invisible broom as it whisked the detritus toward a built-in dustpan. The opening was about 2.5 feet wide and 2 feet high, covered by a meshed screen. Kneeling before it, Mildred gripped the rim of the cover and pulled. The duct was clean, made of a smooth metal sheeting that looked new. It stretched straight ahead, out of sight in the darkness.
Oh, shit.
Mildred removed a small pen flash from a pocket, then holstered her revolver. Reluctantly, she decided that the MP5 would be an encumbrance in such a confined space. As it was, she feared the combat harness beneath her coat might slow her, but she didn't want to jettison the grenades or even the extra clips of ammunition. They could be crucial pieces of ordnance, if not to her, then to Ryan. She took off Doug's ID badge, clipped it to the trigger guard of the auto weapon, and flung it back toward the city, angling it away from the direction in which she had come. Lying flat, she elbow-crawled into the duct, holding the penlight between her front teeth.
Oh, yeah. This will really help my back.
It was easier going than she imagined, due to the electrostatic field's reduction of friction. It lessened the strain on her damaged back muscles. She could feel her flesh tingling and prickling from the field effect, as if a multitude of tiny ants crawled all over her. It wasn't as cold in the duct as it had been in the ventilation shaft, or even the city. Mildred moved forward, the light in her teeth dimly illuminating the darkness only a foot or so in front of her. There was a thick darkness ahead, and she approached it cautiously, every sense alert. She reached the edge of the duct, where it slanted down at an angle, disappearing into yawning blackness. She groped around in the gloom before her, and touched nothing but smooth metal. It only stood to reason that dust, crud, and other foreign particles would have to be swept somewhere, to a container very much like a high-tech dumpster. The concept of creeping head-first into the chute frightened her more than the most monstrous mutie she had ever encountered. Raising her head, she looked forward. The duct still slanted away into blackness. She placed both hands flat against the walls of the duct and pressed the sides of her feet against them. By pushing, it was possible to gain the leverage needed to keep from sliding uncontrollably down the chute, assuming, of course, the angle of the incline didn't become any steeper. A few inches at a time, Mildred wormed herself into the down-slanting duct, expanding her shoulders, using her hands and feet to grip the sides. But the incline of the chute sharpened. She slapped at the sides of the duct, spreading her legs, pushing with her feet to stop herself, but the braking effect was marginal.
No!
She couldn't get a grip, and her body picked up speed. She saw nothing below her but thick darkness. Suddenly, the duct walls vanished. Mildred found she had landed against a soft heap of something and was in a half-prone, half-sitting position. Her head, her shoulders, her neck, and especially her back all ached abominably. She pushed herself away from the yielding heap and wobbled to her feet. As she stood, she felt a slight sinking sensation, as though her footing wasn't solid. She couldn't see what lay beneath her. Patting herself down, she made sure all her personal equipment was where it was supposed to be. Then she took a step forward. Taking off a glove, Mildred reached